Hey, good morning, everybody. We'll start this morning with a little bit of meditation, and then we'll go into the talk. So, I'll lead you in a little body relaxation, and because that's good to do before we start to meditate, and then go into the breathing meditation. So it's important when you're doing the breathing meditation, just let your breathing pattern be the way it is. Don't try and control it, and don't worry about doing it wrong. You know, you can't breathe wrong. Having said that, though, it's good to try and make sure that your belly is moving when you're breathing. You know, we often have a tendency to, especially in modern age where people are quite stressed, to just take short breaths from the top of our chest here, and the air doesn't really get in. So you want to make sure your belly's moving, but you also don't want to be doing big, noisy, deep breaths, okay? But just notice kind of where the air is going in your body. And if you're just taking short breaths up here, you know, try and, like, okay, I got to get my diaphragm to move. So if you're, if you sing, right? Singers learn to that kind of breathing, and yeah, it's just healthy breathing in general, which most of us in modern society don't bother with, and since we're seem to have way too much stress in our life because we make it stressful, then you know, it changes our breathing pattern. And then when you're watching the breath, just be content to watch it. Sometimes it seems like, oh, this is so boring watching my breath. Well, that's kind of because we're addicted to, you know, fast-paced change. You know, when you're watching the TV or watching the internet, the scenes change very quickly. So you're used to, you know, okay, gotta have something. And here, all that's happening is the breath is going in and out, you know. So all of our wish for some, you know, something really exciting to happen, you know, we see how we're very stuck on that idea of, you know, something exciting happening all the time. And we're kind of adrenaline addicts. You know, like, let's do something that, you know, gets the adrenaline going, and got to worry about something, got to be angry and upset about something, got to be stressed about something. Otherwise, my life doesn't have any meaning and is totally flat and boring. And so you'll find people who, you know, they always have some kind of problem. Whenever you talk to them, there's, you know, some crisis in their life. And the moment the crisis gets smoothed out, they feel so abnormal that they create some other drama. Yeah. Have you noticed this? Sometimes with some friends. Oh, I know none of you here do it. you know, but some people really like drama in their lives. You know, and everybody's getting along, and it's like, I can't stand this. There's got to be some conflict. You know, so we've got to yell and scream or slam some doors or hurt some feelings or, you know, and then we feel like we're alive. And then I have something to talk to my friends about with, because I have this problem with so-and-so and this and that, and it's hopeless and, you know. So to get used to doing the breathing meditation and, like, none of that is going on. You'll find it will go on in your head. You know, I mean, there's an incredible amount of chatter going on in there. But none of that is happening now. So everything that, you know, you're worried about and guilty about and stressed about, none of it is happening right now. So what's going on? Where is all of this? You all look quite blank. Where is all of this? You know, this conflict situation and this incredible stressful thing that's definitely going to happen because you're sitting here in your meditation. And where is it? It's not happening, is it? Yeah, it's all in our imagination. Yeah, all things are imagination. So we're actually, you know, people think they can't do creative writing, and we're writing screenplays all the time. You know, and they all star me. Don't they? Me, my problems, what's going to happen to me, it's terrible. Okay? So you really begin to see that when you're watching your breath, because your breath is just this gentle flow of the wind going in and out that's connecting you to the universe. And that's very different than this whole circus going on in our mind, which is not happening now. That circus. Okay, so we'll do the breathing meditation and watch the breath. And, you know, if it's boring, that's okay. Make it a little bit more interesting by paying closer attention to all the different sensations and all the different things that are happening as you're breathing. And or focus just on the gentleness of the breath. Or some days our breath is a little bit coarse, and you can be aware of, you know, the coarse feeling in the breath, or the gentle feeling, or the fast, or the slow, or, you know, the breath isn't the same all the time. So be aware of it, and also be aware of how the breath connects you to the rest of the universe. You know, we're all breathing the same air, aren't we? You know? And our air, the air we're breathing, is what's nourishing our body and, you know, enabling us to continue to live. Okay? So we'll start out with a little body relaxation and then go into the breathing meditation. So wiggle if you need to wiggle. Okay, and then your hands, the right and the left, the thumbs are touching, and that's in your lap, and back straight, the eyes lowered, but your head not lowered. So begin by feeling yourself sitting here on the cushion. Feel your legs against the bottom cushion, your rear on the zafu. Be aware of sharing the space with like-minded people who support you in your spiritual journey, and feel their support. And give your support to them, too. And then begin by being aware of sensations in your feet and in your legs. What kind of sensations are there? If there's any sensation of tightness, then let that go. And be aware of sensations in your belly and your lower abdomen. Some people store their tension in their belly, so their belly's tight. So if you find that your belly's tight, you're holding tension there, really let your belly relax. You know? Let your belly go out as you inhale, and in as you exhale. So release that tension there. Then be aware of sensations in your back, shoulders, chest, and arms. A lot of us store our stress there, especially in our shoulders. So if your shoulders are tight, try lifting them up to your ears. Lift them up as high as you can. Tuck your chin in a little bit. Hold it there. And then let your shoulders fall very quickly. That's quite good for releasing the tension in your shoulders and back. And then be aware of sensations in your neck, face, jaw, and head. Your facial muscles are scrunched, let them relax. If your jaw is clenched, let that also relax. And be aware that your physical posture is firm and relaxed at the same time. And so similarly, your mind can be firm and relaxed at the same time. So having prepared our body, let's prepare our mind by cultivating our motivation. And really thinking that I have this beautiful inner Buddha nature, beautiful potential in my life. And I want to understand it and tap into it, so that I can make a positive contribution to the world, to all the beings in the world. And so put the meditation that you're about to do within the framework of being of benefit to yourself and others. Then turn your attention to the breath. Let your breathing pattern be what it is, but pay attention to all the sensations as you inhale and exhale, and to all the sensations between each inhale and exhale, and between each exhale and the following inhale. We'll all have some time of silence to do this. So you gave me some ideas for topics yesterday, but I want to kind of give a little bit of background first. Kind of relates to your topic about awareness. But to say that we have a body and a mind, okay, and they're different continuums, and they have different functions, but they're related to each other. So our body is made of atoms and molecules and chemicals, and you can examine it with scientific instruments. And our mind, our consciousness, is clarity and awareness. Yeah, so it's not something that's tangible, not something that can be analyzed with scientific instruments. Yeah. That's kind of a surprise for us because, you know, we're so related to the external world. But if we think about it, there's a lot of things that are not made of atoms, you know, that are not matter. Democracy, love, anger, you know, peace. These things are not things you can see or touch or smell or taste or hear. So our brain is part of our body. Our mind is not part of our body. Scientists can tell you a lot about the brain. They don't understand the mind very well. Okay? So in Buddhism, we're really looking at the mind. And of course, you know, brain relates to mind and mind relates to brain, but they're different things. Okay. When, you know, science, there's a whole thing of scientific reductionism where everything's reduced to atoms and molecules. And if that were so, then when you said to somebody, I love you, what you mean is, I love your brain. Which would mean if somebody's brain were right there, you would go, oh, there's such strong feelings of love as you look at that brain. What do you think? It'd be pretty weird, wouldn't it? Somebody looks at that gray thing with blood around it and says, oh, I love you so much. You're so wise, you're so sweet. Don't cry, you comfort the brain. Okay? So the mind is something different. Yeah, it's clarity and awareness. And the mind has so much potential, you know, to cognize objects, to develop all sorts of incredibly good qualities. And the mind is also covered by the clouds of our disturbing emotions, like ignorance, anger, and attachment. Okay, so sometimes we talk about the nature of the mind being like the wide open sky, and our disturbing emotions being like the clouds. Yeah. So up until a few days ago, we certainly had a lot of clouds in this part of the country. You couldn't see the sky, but did the sky disappear and cease to exist? No, it's still the wide open sky. We just couldn't see it. So in the same way, you know, our mind has this amazing potential and the seeds of so many good qualities in it. But when we're overwhelmed, you know, by anger, jealousy, or laziness, or shame, or, you know, these kinds of disturbing emotions, then we can't see that pure nature of the mind. All we see is the clouds. And in our limited view, we sometimes think the clouds are all there is, that there's no possibility to go beyond the clouds. But if we really look at our experience, we know that's not true, because there's been times in our life where our mind's been very clear and our heart's been completely open and calm. So we know that that state is possible. Yeah, and we want to create the causes and conditions to, you know, experience that clear nature of the mind and experience our good qualities and cultivate them. Now, instead of staying under the clouds of our disturbing emotions. So these disturbing emotions, they're really troublemakers. Yeah? And we can see in our life that we suffer so often due to them. You know, right here and now. When you're angry, are you happy? I don't think so. When you're filled with resentment, are you happy? When you're greedy, are you happy? Well, maybe a little bit. If I can get what I want without somebody else knowing that I'm greedy. Yeah. But we have this weird kind of happiness where we're not completely peaceful with it. You're like, let's see what underhanded kind of thing I can do to get what I want without anybody noticing how conniving I am or how self-centered I am. Okay, so, you know, you might get a little bit of happiness from getting what you want, but somehow still not totally peaceful inside. Yeah? When your mind is filled with shame or with guilt, are you happy? Okay, so we can see these disturbing emotions disturb, you know, our happiness right here and now. And they also make us do actions that create the cause for more unhappiness. Okay, so when we're angry, we may yell and scream at somebody or tell somebody off or beat them up. Or we might slam the door in their face and go the other direction. But either way, we're not putting out good energy in the universe, and it's going to have repercussions that we ourselves experience. Okay? So we may get some immediate repercussions in this life. And then also, when we talk about karma, karma means actions. So we do these actions, and then the repercussions, the results come in future lives. Okay, but in any case, the disturbing emotions are at the source of them. They're the real troublemakers. And it's quite interesting to really watch in our mind, in our meditation, the way the disturbing emotions function and how they arise and how they are based on a story that we write ourselves. And we confuse that story with an external objective reality. So just a small example. Many of you came here and didn't know anybody when you came. So, you know, we've all had that experience of going into a group where we don't know anybody. And sometimes before we go into that group, our mind makes up the story of, who are all these people? I don't know who they are, and I don't know if I'm going to fit in with them. I'm probably not going to fit in, because, you know, they all know each other, and they're friends, and I'm the one who was left out, and it's going to be really uncomfortable there. And anyway, I don't know if I'm going to even like them to start with. So, you know, so if you think like that before you go into the room filled with strangers, what's your experience likely to be when you go in the room? Yeah? It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, doesn't it? It's like, I don't like these people and I don't fit in here and they're, you know, all on the same page and I'm left out. You know, just because of the way we were thinking beforehand, we create that story, and then we see the situation through the veil, you know, or through the periscope of our story. Our lawn is going to get mowed today. A volunteer who's coming very kindly mowing our lawn, you know, don't you think? Our lawn is really big. Okay. Or before we go into the room of strangers, we could think, oh, there's a room full of people I don't know. I bet you they all have had, you know, different experiences than me, and this is going to be really interesting to talk to them and hear what their life experience is about and learn how they think, and you know, we're going to have some really good discussions. And so if you think like that before you go in the room, what's your experience going to be? You know? It's going to correspond to what you thought beforehand. So it's interesting, isn't it, that before going in the room, the room full of strangers is the same. We can look at it with this mind of, you know, we can't relate to them, or we can look at them with this mind of, wow, this is going to be interesting. And by the way we think, we create what our experience is going to be. But we don't think that our mind is creating our experience. We think when we enter the room that it's an objective reality out there, and we're just experiencing it, you know, how it is from its own side, not related to our own mind. But that's not true, is it? Not true at all, because we're creating how it's going to be. So lots of times when we have problems with people, it's because of the stories we are writing about our relationships with those people. Yeah? Not because of who they are, not because of some objective reality, but because of how we're interpreting the situation and what we're making out of it. So sometimes you can, even how people look at us, we can make a whole story of how people look at us. Yeah? Sometimes they look one way, like, and we go, oh, they don't like me, and they're bigoted. I know they're bigoted, and they're prejudiced, you know, so whatever group we are, they're prejudiced against this group, and, you know, they're so unfriendly, and they don't like me, and they're such a horrible, nasty person. You know, I just walk in the room, and instead of saying good morning, they look at me like this. And, oh, I can't stand these people, and how come I have to go to work with them, or how come I have to live with them? And it's like, this is just intolerable. Okay, and all the person did is look at us. Yeah, we could look, we could have the same situation happen and look at them and say, wow, this person doesn't look very happy. I wonder if they have some problem in their life, or I wonder if they have a health problem, or I wonder if they're stressed or worried about something. And so then we have some care and compassion arise, and maybe we go up to them and say, hi. And then they're so surprised and they go, oh, hi. I had a friend who worked at NPR, and he was convinced that one of his colleagues did not like him and thought he did terrible work, you know, because he interviewed people and made some of the NPR stories. And he just, like, avoided this colleague, and, like, this guy is, like, he's so unfriendly, and I know he doesn't like me. And this went on, you know, for quite a while. And then in the Dharma class, one day I said, I give people the assignment to talk to somebody that they don't usually talk to, who they usually feel uncomfortable around. So he made himself go and, you know, because usually in the office they would pass each other and not even look at each other, even though they had never talked, they had never had a fight or anything. But, you know, Peter was just convinced this guy didn't like him. So so then Peter went in, you know, afterwards, and he, when they were walking by each other, and he looked at the guy and said, "Good morning." And the guy stopped, and they started talking. And as it winds up, the other guy really thought Peter's NPR stories were very good. You know? And Peter had built up this whole thing. And, you know, and been so unhappy at his workplace over something that his own mind had invented. You know, that wasn't there. Now, sometimes with, you know, many of you wanted me to talk about relationships. With the relationships with our family and with the people that we're very close to, you know, we do this kind of thing all the time, where we project stuff on them and we think it's reality, and we get completely all tangled up in stuff. So just to give you an example, a personal example, I came from a family where that was, well, in my eyes, very overprotective. You know, I had to be home at a certain time, and if I was, and I never was 1 minute late, because I knew if I was 1 minute late, my mother would be on the phone with the police saying, "My daughter's been killed in a car accident, she's been kidnapped, go find her." You know, because I grew up with a worrywart Jewish mother, you know, and I was not going to change her. yeah, so it was terrible, you know. I felt really confined about all this. And whenever my mom was unhappy about something, my dad was much more easygoing than my mom, but it also happened when he was unhappy, but that was less often, but especially when my mom was unhappy, then I felt it's my fault, I did something wrong, you know? So it's like, who knows what may happen, but, you know, if she's unhappy because of some small thing, you know, it's my fault. Or if she's even unhappy about something I did, you know, oh, I must be a really bad person because look, I did this and I made my mom so unhappy. Yeah? And so I took on, what I did is I was writing this story that attributed emotions to my mom. And not only attributed emotions to my mom and sometimes my dad, but I made up the story that their emotions are my responsibility. Yeah? That I make them feel bad, or I'm the cause for their unhappiness. Yeah. And many times in just kind of regular society, we think this, don't we? You know? Somebody's unhappy with something I said or something I did, and it's like, I'm a bad person because I made them unhappy. When I met the Dharma, I had to really start looking at that way of thinking about things and asking myself, if every time my mom is unhappy about something I do, does it mean I'm a bad person? And does it mean that I'm responsible for her unhappiness? You know? And in investigating the whole thing, what I saw is that I cannot control anybody else's emotions. In fact, you know, I can hardly handle my own, let alone control somebody else's. I can't make somebody else happy, and I also can't make them miserable, because I can't jump inside them and throw some switches and change the story that they're making up about me. Because if they're happy with me, it's because they're making up one story. If they're unhappy with me, it's because they're making up another story. And you know what? I can't control what story somebody writes about me. No. Sometimes I can influence it. I mean, if I have a really horrible motivation and I want to inflict pain on somebody because I dislike them, yeah, I can try pretty hard to do that, and sometimes I'm successful, but not always. But in that kind of case, if I have a bad motivation, that bad motivation is my responsibility. Yeah. And I'm deliberately trying to influence somebody in an adverse way. But if I have a neutral motivation, or if I even have a good motivation, and somebody else gets mad at me, is that my responsibility? Yeah. If I have a good motivation and somebody gets mad at me, does that mean I'm a bad person? Yeah, think about it. If you have a friend who you see is starting to drink too much or smoke too much dope, and you go to your friend and say, hey, you know, be careful, and your friend gets really defensive and mad at you and says, mind your own business, I'm going to smoke and drink if I want to, and, you know, mind your own business, and they get really mad at you, does that mean you're a bad person? Does that mean that you made them angry? Was your intention to make them angry? No, your intention was to help them. And due to the way they're thinking, they misunderstand your intention and they get mad. But you didn't make them mad. They got mad from their own side. Yeah. So in that kind of case, their anger is not our responsibility. We're not the one who made them angry, and we're also not going to be the one who makes them happy either. Because all of that is coming from their mind and the way they're looking at it. And so in the similar way, you know, when we deal with other people, you know, if our parents or our relatives or our friends get mad at us, we tend to say, you made me mad. No, they didn't make us mad. We got mad all by ourselves. Yeah, we got mad because of the story that we're telling ourselves about what they did. Okay? Because there's so many different ways to look at somebody's action. You know, somebody can come to us and explode and go, and accuse us of all sorts of stuff, and whether it's true or not, you know, if we look at it and say, oh, they're so mad at me, I'm a bad person, I made them angry, you know, I better rearrange my life and become goody two-shoes so that they're going to be happy. You know goody two-shoes? Yeah. I never met her, but I feel like I know her. Yeah. One part of goody two-shoes somewhere in here, you know. Hey, okay, I better be goody two-shoes, and then these people will be happy with me, and if they're happy with me, then I must be a good person. Yeah. And so then we change all of our behavior, and sometimes even do things that are unethical, so we can please that other person. And we try and be what we think they think we should be. Do you get what I mean? You know? I act the way I think they think I should be. So I try and make myself into something I'm not. And I'm not even sure if that's what they want me to be, because I haven't asked them. I'm just thinking about what I think they think I should be. Yeah. And then I make myself into this fictitional person, tiptoeing around, trying not to annoy anybody, because if I annoy anybody, that means I'm a horrible person and I'm filled with guilt and shame. Is that any way to live a life? We're so out of touch with ourselves and so blaming of ourselves. And we aren't even sure what's going on inside of other people to start with. Yeah? So that's no way to live. And it's all make-believe story that our mind has written up about what I think they think. Yeah. So it's actually much more authentic to watch our own motivations. And if we have a good motivation, it doesn't really matter whether people like us or not, or people say thank you, or people blame us. Because the basic thing is our motivation, why we did it. Because we can't control how they react. Because like the example I just gave with our friend who has a substance abuse problem, we come with a good motivation, they get mad at us and think we're awful. There's other times when we're really sneaky and manipulative, and you know those times when we do really nice things to people, not because we care about them, but because we want them to like us and we want to have a good reputation. Do you know those times? Have you done that? Yeah, we've all done that, haven't we? You know, we put on this big show being such a nice person, but our motivation is, you know, we don't really care beans about this other person. We just want to get something out of them. And they may think we're great. Oh, you're so kind, you're so generous, they say to us. You know, we completely pull the wool over their eyes. Does that mean we're kind and generous because they think that about us? No, because we know our own motivation. Our motivation was rotten. Okay? So we can't judge. My point is we can't judge or evaluate who we are based on what other people think of us. And we can't make them happy and we can't make them unhappy. Their emotions are not our responsibility. Our responsibility is our motivation. Our responsibility is our intention and acting with a clear heart. If we act with a clear heart, it's fine. If we act with ignorance or attachment or greed or selfishness, that's when we get really tangled up. Okay? But the self-centered thought is very sneaky, and it's the one that says, I'm so selfish and they're unhappy with me because I'm so selfish. Okay? And that way of thinking also is distorted. I don't think you're going to believe that one. Yeah? What do you think? Oh, they're so unhappy with me because I'm so selfish. I'm such a bad person for being so selfish. Is that true or is that made up? Made up, isn't it? We may be selfish. That part is true. We may be selfish. But again, we can't control what they're feeling. But sometimes we aren't selfish and we blame ourselves for being selfish because somebody else is unhappy with me. If they're unhappy with me, it means I'm selfish. Is that true? Come on, you studied logic in college. Yeah? Is that true? If somebody else is unhappy with me, it's because I'm selfish. That's not true. That's not logical. Okay? So we're the one who is going to know if we're selfish or not selfish. But just because somebody's unhappy with us doesn't mean we're selfish. It doesn't mean we're a bad person. That doesn't mean when somebody's unhappy with us, we go, I don't care about you. You know. Of course, if somebody's suffering, we care about that person. But we don't take responsibility for their emotions. Their emotions are their thing. And we don't take responsibility for them or try to fix them. Because that's, you know, how are we going to fix somebody else's emotions? We can do 15 somersaults and 5, you know, cartwheels. And is that going to fix somebody else's emotions? Okay. But you might say, but, you know, if I act really sweet and I'm loving, then they're happy. Okay. Well, sometimes they may be happy if we act sweet and loving. But sometimes they may not be happy when we act sweet and loving. Yeah? Okay, so it's not our behavior. So it's really futile to try and take on responsibility for how everybody else thinks and how everybody else feels. Because the one thing we can manage is our own emotions and our own thoughts. And that's what we need to focus on and manage. And if we do a good job with that, then we influence other people in a good way. But if we're always taking responsibility for their emotions and are completely out of touch with what's going on in ourselves, because we're so busy trying to be what they want us to be, then we're not going to be happy at all. And chances are they're not going to be happy either. Because you find so often, this happens a lot with romantic relationships, but not just those, also with parent and child and boss and all sorts of other people, is, you know, if we try and be what we think they think we should be, and we put on a really good show, but because we're not that, it's going to crack at some point, isn't it? And then all hell's going to break loose. I thought you were like this, and now you're like that. So either they do that to us, or we do that to them. But it all comes because of stories we've made up in our mind about who we are and who they are. Okay, questions, comments? Yeah.
I'm just wondering how, as we continue on to examine these relationships and our projections that we impose upon each other,
mm-hmm.
I kind of have two things going right now with this. Is one is, how then do we relate to others with really relating to them instead of relating to our projection? I mean, mm-hmm. Is it possible at all for us to really know the other person?
Mm-hmm.
And then, as it goes along, how do we stop ourselves from not relating at all because we're so trying to draw back and examine our own internal problems and issues? So we're trying mm-hmm. to sever the connection.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing the root as being the other person.
Mm. Okay. So, those are two very good questions. So the first one, say it again, was,
how can I relate to somebody without seeing my projections? Like, to really try
So is it possible, really, to relate to others in an authentic way without our projections? Yeah. Here is where, in Buddhism, we talk about all living beings want to be happy and they don't want suffering. So that is something we know about everybody, no matter who they are, is they want to be happy and they don't want to suffer. It's hopeless Lawnmowers make noise. No, because we're going to end in just a few minutes. And then we'll go on the other side, and then he'll come there to mow the lawn. So, if we look, every living being, whether they're a human being, or even the cats, or the voles, or the birds, or the mosquitoes, every living being wants to be happy. Every living being doesn't want to suffer. That's something that's true for everybody. Okay? So when we meet a person, we actually know something quite deep about them. You know, they want to be happy and they don't want to suffer. And we can look in their heart and we know this about them. Because we're all exactly the same. So if we relate to somebody in that way, here's another living being just like me who doesn't want to suffer, who wants to be happy. Then we can feel close to everybody because we know something quite special about them, you know, which is their innermost heart, which is the same as our innermost heart. And it doesn't matter what race they are, it doesn't matter how old they are, it doesn't matter what they look like. It doesn't matter what their sexual orientation is, or what their gender is, or what their socioeconomic class is, or what their religion is, or what their ethnicity is. None of that stuff matters. Because when we look in the heart of anybody, we know this thing that is really the most important thing to them. So if we relate to human beings on that level, then we can have really good relationships with them. Yeah. Because then we listen, if they're speaking, we can listen to their suffering, but we don't say I'm the cause of it. We can listen to their joy and rejoice in it without being egotistical, saying I'm the cause of it. Okay? So we can rejoice with them, we can have compassion for them, and it's a much cleaner relationship. And it's a very heart-to-heart relationship because it's not as clouded with all the expectations of I want you to be like this and you want me to be like that. Okay? So you actually have a closer relationship with others. Now that's the ideal. Getting there takes some time and some effort and some patience, okay? So that leads into your second question, is how do we keep from just blocking others out because we're trying to look at what's going on in our mind and get rid of all the projections we have on other people? Well, what we do is we do two things simultaneously. You know, one is, well, not exactly the same time, but, you know, together. One is sometimes we monitor ourselves, you know, and we have a self-awareness that is looking at, you know, okay, am I projecting? Am I having false expectations? Am I blaming? You know, and if so, then I need to really work on my own mind and calm my own mind. But one of the ways to get us over the projections and the blaming, whether we blame ourselves or blame them, is to look into their heart and see, here's another living being just like me who wants to be happy and doesn't want to suffer. Okay? So training ourselves to look in people's heart is actually part of the antidote for getting over all these, you know, projections and expectations that we put on them. Okay? So it doesn't mean we withdraw from people. We're not talking about withdrawing from people. Because we live in a world where we're completely interdependent and relating to people all the time. And we need other people. We cannot live without other living beings. We don't grow our own food and make our own clothes and build our own buildings and teach ourselves, you know. We're so dependent on the kindness of others. So there's no way to withdraw from them, in fact. You know. But we want to develop a connection with others where we really appreciate them, you know, and have that sense of appreciation and gratitude in our hearts for what they do. And at the same time, you know, work on our own motivation. Is that making some sense? So sometimes we go off to one extreme, we go off to the other extreme. This is very natural. Yeah. But when we go to one extreme, then we notice it, and we rebalance ourselves. When we go to the other extreme, we notice it, we rebalance ourselves. So it's time for us to stop now, but we can continue in the discussion group. Okay? So we'll do the dedication, and then you have a little bit of break time. And then we'll go listen to the lawnmower on that side. Actually, if he's on that side by the time the break is over, then let's meet in here, okay? Due to this merit, may we soon attain the enlightened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May the born have no decline, but increase forevermore.